Good news, bad news. Bad news, it's a too long movie series about werewolves and vampires that's far too concerned with supernatural politics and interspecies breeding difficulties. Good news, I'm not talking about Twilight this time. It's Underworld Evolution, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
This is the number one movie in America. I'm Sean Collier, and I'm here with two very limited superheroes. It's Camila Adams.
Hello, etc.
And Robin Hitchcock.
I'm a hybrid of a loser and a dork.
Yeah. I am excited for this conversation because.
Over.
I gotta say, this is why I wanted to do this podcast, though, because there are things out there in the world, pieces of pop culture, that to someone somewhere, to millions of moviegoers, mean something.
Right.
And mean nothing. And Underworld is that. So yeah, it was fun to try to figure out what the hell this is.
I was feeling hopeful. Like, I was like, you know what? The first one's on Netflix. It's just one before it. I'm going to go ahead and watch this. I'm like, watch. Maybe this will be like my new thing. It'll be like a new fandom that I jump on board with and blah, blah, blah. And then like 20 minutes in, the first one, I'm like, nope. I can't. I fell asleep, go back. And so I watched the second one, not really knowing anything, any background.
They give you the three recaps.
Dude. We'll get into it, but as there are so many. I gave up very, very close, very, very soon in this one also.
That's one of the fascinating things about this to me, because this is, you know, pulp. Which is fine. This is, you know, fundamentally here so that vampires and werewolves can fight and you can watch the monsters fight. And yet there is so much going on. It's like trying to follow Dostoevsky, only it's so we can get to a monster smushing another monster's face.
Can we do the plot recap? Because I'm like literally physically anxious about this.
This is exciting.
This is quarantine stress you did not need, is trying to summarize this. All right, here's Robin with a 60-second recap of what is going on in Underworld Evolution. Ready, set, go.
Okay, so first there's the title card that explains that there were twin brothers, and one of them got bit by a bat and turned into a vampire, and one got bit by a wolf and turned into a werewolf. Then we see in 1202 that there's a big shoot, like fight-em-up war between werewolves and vampires, or maybe people, I'm not sure. Anyway, fast forward, then we see a quick recap of what happened in Underworld, which is basically the vampire lady fell in love with a human who then turned into a werewolf vampire hybrid. And then they are on the run. The werewolf dude, who's that squinty guy from Felicity, he gets totally shot up and almost dead. She feeds him his blood. Everybody's very horny for blood in this movie. It's gross. Derek Jacobi's around. There's a bad vampire bat monster, and he awakens someone with blood, and this is really hard. You also get memories from blood, and then the vampire lady becomes her own kind of hybrid by the end, and she can be in the sunlight. That's the best I got, guys.
I appreciate you for summing it up for me, because a lot of that stuff, I'm like, what? He was a vampire werewolf hybrid?
I mean, you failed, but in your defense, no one could have succeeded. it was like,
I don't think Kate Beckinsale would have been able to have done that.
I could, yeah. So I can't remember her name, like I said in our last episode, I constantly confuse her with, no, I couldn't remember the name Kate Beckinsale.
The name Kate Beckinsale.
I constantly confuse her with Jennifer Connelly. Watching this movie, I kept being like, she looks nothing like Jennifer Connelly. Like, they are both pretty white brunette women, and that is it. And yet, to me, they are the same human being.
That's crazy.
It's an insult to Jennifer Connelly's perfect breasts, also.
There was a stunningly and yet not stunningly long explanation in the IMDb trivia of why you don't see her boobs. They filmed it and then they submitted it, like, but then they cut it out, but really she had a no nudity clause. Who the hell cares?
She's pretty damn naked.
Yeah. And like, one of the things that kind of kept me going for this film was that when I just kind of looked up Scott Speedman on Twitter, have a Twitter, but a lot of people were talking about him and the hot, hot, hot sex scene from Underworld Evolution. And I'm like, sweet. So at least I got that to look forward to. That was bland and fucking like, that was like wet porridge. I don't know what the fuck.
Really, it's just that kind of sex scene where you go, oh, wow, those are some naked people. Right. You know, like, he is surprisingly naked. You see his butt. And there's always that moment when you see an actor, a male actor in particular's butt, where you're like, ah, a sex scene.
And because then that went down a rabbit hole of Googling like the top sex scenes in movies. So there was that's like half an hour spent during watching this movie was me going down that rabbit hole.
Send me your links.
If I ever meet Seth Rogen, the first thing I'm going to say to him is, I'm surprised to admit that you're in two of my favorite sex scenes in movies. Because what's the name of the movie with Charlize? Long Shot. When they finally have sex in Long Shot and both exclaim, oh boy, at the same time while orgasming, I've never laughed that hard.
That was really good.
And I discussed it recently, the genuinely sweet and sexy scene in Zach and Miri when they finally have sex. Those are two excellent sex scenes.
Speaking of genuinely sweet and sexy and amateur porn, R.I.P. Lynn Shelton.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's really sad.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's the most shocking thing. I did not hate this movie.
Really?
I mean, flipping back in the notebook, it could just be the combined power of War for the Planet of the Apes, then Twilight Breaking Dawn, then Glass, that whatever we watch next I was going to like. But when it's not trying to tell me what the movie is about, and it's just like, oh, these vampires and werewolves are fighting. Yeah, cool, fine. I'll watch that.
But I think we're slowly becoming a vampire werewolf podcast.
I don't know. How did this happen, Tony? I guess I found it like incoherent. Like,
yeah.
Beyond the plot being incredibly complicated, like the action scenes or that kind of action scene where you don't know where anyone is.
Right.
I also, the nature of the main bad guy where he's like shapeshifty, sort of a vampire, sort of a bat monster.
Mm.
Like, he has those chicken wing skewers that he occasionally stabs people with. I often found myself thinking that he was in a fight and then finding out it was some other random monster.
That's right. True.
So that was a big coherency problem for me. I mean, full disclosure, I half watched this movie twice. Like, I had it on last night and I found myself not paying attention. I was playing Animal Crossing. And then this morning when I realized I had to do the plot recap, I was like, well, I'll just put it on in the background while I work. And so there are parts of this movie that I feel like I maybe have never seen.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely the case for me. I was half watching it there are many points. And I chicken wing guy, like, I wasn't clear. Was he awakened from like 1200 years sleep or something like that?
Yeah,
I think that's the case. How the fuck does he know how to use a computer?
Blood memory.
That's the thing. It's a very dangerous world because if a vampire like licks a little bit of your blood, they know your ATM code. You have to watch out.
It's a whole new threat.
I only watched it once, but it did take me 10 minutes to get through a 3-minute YouTube recap of the first one because I'm like, wait, okay, which one is Corvon? Like, who's Why does everyone have a name like it's a 16-year-old coming up with a character for their Dungeons & Dragons campaign? One, but
you
two.
You know why.
Yeah. who is anybody, and what is who's betraying who, and which is related to, like, I struggled and gave up at figuring out the answers to those questions.
Can we quickly talk about how the 16-year-old in question is Danny McBride?
Okay, is it that Danny McBride, like, for real,
that
for real?
Danny McBride.
It's not that Danny McBride.
Not
Are you
Mother
sure?
Nature in her pantsuit, Danny McBride?
Yes. Are you sure it's not that Danny McBride?
I went down this rabbit hole, and I'm pretty sure it is not that Danny McBride. Yeah, if you put Danny McBride into IMDb, the first result is Danny McBride, actor, Pineapple Express. And the second result is Danny McBride, writer, Underworld Evolution, a different guy with a picture.
Oh, well, thank God.
Yeah.
That makes me feel much better.
That was
a real Paul W.S. Anderson situation over here.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I also fully conflate this movie with Ultraviolet, which I think is not about vampires. But then when they started talking about ultraviolet rounds, I got very confused.
That broke my brain a little bit because I forgot about the movie Ultraviolet. My mind tried to do ultraviolet movies, and I'm like, the thing you get a digital version of your Blu-ray purchase on?
Right, exactly. I forgot about that movie. I never saw it, but.
No. Also, Paul W.S. Anderson married Mila Jovovich, and or however you say her name, and Les Wineman, or whatever his name is. What's the actual director of this? Len Wiseman, who ought to do more thinking and less Wineman. he married not Jennifer Connelly, Kate Beckinsale.
Mm-hmm. I was shocked to find out that Kate and Michael Sheen have a kid together. Like they broke up. Yeah, they broke up. They met and during like a, I think they were both in some Broadway play years upon years ago, and then they broke up after this movie.
Never married, but do have a kid.
Like yeah, this movie broke 99. Up their partnership.
I think so. I was also surprised to see Michael Sheen as a young man. Like, I don't know why. He's always in his 50s to me.
Don't think I would have recognized him if I didn't know.
Right.
Well, both of these facts are addressed in the Factsy segment, appropriately enough.
Get into it.
Underworld Evolution was released January 20th of 2006, the third number one of that year, winning its debut weekend with $26.8 million. A complete nothing weekend made room for this film to become a number one movie in America. The second place finisher was the animated film Hoodwinked! ! In its sixth weekend. So the sixth weekend of Hoodwinked was number two. Underworld Evolution immediately fell to third place the following weekend, behind two debuting films, Big Mama's House 2 at $27.7 million and Nanny McPhee at $14.5 million. Underworld Evolution only made $11.4 million in its second weekend. That's a big drop. Even in a slow January, it only managed 4 weeks in the top 10, earning a total of $62.3 million, the 47th highest grossing film of the year overall. That is good enough, however, to somehow make this the most successful Underworld movie. There are five. This made the most money, albeit in a virtual tie with 2012's Underworld Awakening. Those two are separated by less than $3,000 in their overall take. The quick series rundown. Underworld came out in 2003, $51.9 million. This came out in 2006, $62.3 million. Underworld Rise of the Lycans, mostly a prequel, came out in 2009, $45.8 million. Underworld Awakening, it was in 2012, the exact same amount of money, $62.3 million. And finally, Underworld Blood Wars in 2016, $30.3 million, easily the least successful. So yeah, five of these things. Over 13 years, they kept going.
Least money, best title, Blood Wars.
Yeah, sure.
What it is.
Len Wiseman, the creator, and I would say visionary, but that seems wrong, behind the Underworld series, says he was working on a sixth film, but Kate Beckinsale basically said, no, I'm not going to do that. That's probably it for the series, and was probably complicated by their divorce. Len Wiseman and Kate Beckinsale got married in 2004 and separated in 2015. They were together for 11 years.
That's 100 years in Hollywood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
About this guy, Len Wiseman, he mainly does underworld. He actually started out as a props guy. He was in the props department on Independence Day, Men in Black, the late 90s Godzilla. Started doing music videos, Megadeth, En Vogue, Static X. Besides this series, he only has two other features, Live Free or Die Hard, which was the fourth. I don't remember. Fourth Die Hard movie.
Internationally known as Die Hard 4.0.
Not a number one movie in America. It finished second behind Evan Almighty, but that was decently well received, both critically and box office wise. I know I saw it. I don't remember it at all.
It's probably the third best Die Hard movie.
I mean, that's good enough. Yeah. He also, Len Wiseman also did the 2012 Total Recall remake, and a bit of a bomb box office wise. Also not a number one movie in America. It finished behind The Dark Knight Rises. He's done TV. He's the guy behind the series Sleepy Hollow and Lucifer.
The first season of Sleepy Hollow was dope.
Yes.
The first season was great, and then it got so bad.
It was
so bad.
I was so upset. Definitely should have been season.
Honestly, like, I'm getting mad about it. So we're gonna move. I have not thought about how they did that show wrong and how they did Nicole Beharie wrong in a long time, and I don't want to think about it. So let's go back to being mad about vampires and werewolves, or excuse me, lichens. Go ahead.
Lichens. Len Wiseman is allegedly, well, you can be mad about this too, Robin, you specifically. Len Wiseman is allegedly on tap to direct the first John Wick spin-off movie, an all-female-focused John Wick universe film called Ballerina.
No, I'm into it.
Okay, sure.
I hope he doesn't mess it up, but like a Die Hard 4.0 or whatever. Well, I can't believe I just called it that. That's so gross. Live Free or Die Hard USA USA was good. He is capable of making something good.
Yeah, this could be that. Sure, why the hell not? And to get to my last point and what you mentioned there, not to put too much focus on Kate Beckinsale's relationships, but yes, she was previously in an 8-year relationship with fellow recently covered Know Me a Vampire Michael Sheen. Not only that, when we flashback and see young Celine in this movie, Underworld Evolution, that is the child of Kate Beckinsale and Michael Sheen.
Oh.
I just also, it's really just kind of bugging me. You mentioned the music videos that Wiseman did, and you said En Vogue.
Thank you. Okay, I was like, I'm just going to let it go. Full disclosure, we're recording over Skype and it's a little wonky today, so when we talk over each other it gets a little bit more broken up than normal, and so I was like, I'm just gonna let it go. But thank you, Camila, for bringing justice back to this world.
I just want to bring it out there in Vogue or as what those visionaries of R&B vocalists songbird women like to be called. I don't really expect that you've got a lot of En Vogue in your rotation, but I just wanted to put it out there because I just had a vision of Addie listening to this and then angrily seeing you about it.
I guess I went to a French pronoun pronunciation.
Like when you said diplo.
Like, yes, much like that.
Anyway, shout out to Addie Twigg. She's the voice on our theme song and a great person. And she's got a bunch. Addie Twigg, go Google her and listen to her music. Listen to her podcast. They're all great.
Mm-hmm. That having been cleared up, what will I mispronounce next week? Underworld Evolution. When I say I didn't hate it, do not take that to mean that I think this is a good movie or it makes sense. Not at all. But like I said, I actually kind of like these like shifty, weird CGI werewolf morphing effects. I kind of zone out while they're, you know, talking about anything, and I wait for an action sequence, and monsters hit each other. I don't even necessarily know who the monsters are, but you know, Twilight was kind of waiting around hoping that this would happen. And we just watched that.
Right.
So
right.
It was satisfying in a way.
Okay. I can see that.
The action sequences were great. I will give it that. Like, it was very interesting. I thought it was a little weird for me. I just kept thinking, why is this vampire using guns? Why are vampires
because
using guns?
Of
why
the Matrix. The first
That's
movie the is said. Literally...
That's...
Like, what if Trinity were a vampire?
That's what Dan said. So yeah, so that was a little off-putting for me. Visually it's stunning, like it's really great. But like, yeah, speaking of like her costume, it's her vagina.
I just was like, girl must have been like, she said no to a sex movie because she didn't want to have another year of yeast infections.
I can't imagine. Like, I must have had to get like lubed up and stuffed into that thing every
day. I kept thinking about Ross on that one episode of Friends.
You make yourself a pair of face pants. Nobody knows the difference.
That was the most unrealistic thing about the sex scene. We watch him take her clothes off, and they don't kind of make that like latex snapping off of flesh noise.
Right. Yes, he was able to get it off like very easily and seductively. When normally, like he would have a smack in the face.
Would again, like I can't hit in the face with the zipper after it.
Right. She's like just, and there's all this instruction. No, tug a little bit to the just tug a little bit harder. You lay down, and we'll just try to the scooch, just kind of scooch your way.
I do want to say that I watched the first one also a little bit. I sort of half watched it, and the one thing that it had that I felt was really missing from this one was that there's these, like, because she's an elite vampire, right? She's she has a silly title for her role in the war. It's like I want to say Death Eater, but it's not Death Eater.
Is it Death Dealer?
It's Death Dealer.
Death
yes.
Dealer.
Oh.
There are other vampires who just like hang out in a mansion and wear goth clothes and like live their best lives, and they
That's
were my favorite
right.
characters. And I miss them, and I hope that they're okay.
I hope that they're okay. They're just still not really getting themselves involved in all the politics and the bullshit. Like, they're just like, you know what? We just want to party and live forever, man. I don't have time right? for...
Well, we got to the one guy who was having a very emo interspecies orgy when Kate Beckinsale rolled in and ruined his day.
That's right.
That was...
Strange actor to have chosen for that role, because he's not the kind of guy that you want to see in an orgy. Like,
not
it just
really, no.
I wasn't expecting that at all. I was like, oh, this guy. I think that, like, I feel like he taught me psychology in high school. I don't know.
This movie is horny for blood.
Horny for
blood. Yeah. I knew something was weird when, for some reason, and again, for some reason is the most useful phrase in talking about this movie. For some reason... He has to, Michael, the man one, the guy, he tries to eat normal food.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Then,
yeah.
And then he looks like me when I eat jalapenos and wrecks up the bar. And somehow he has to drink a little of Kate Beckinsale's blood so that he doesn't die. And so he does. But like, she comes a little bit, like just a little.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
What's happening?
Well,
everybody involved is horny for blood.
I just thought the vomiting scene, I assumed that somebody had, and I guess I was just really reaching and hoping. Just
on
thinking,
my second watch.
I thought for sure that he had walked in and this was like a test for like, oh, okay, this guy will be is a werewolf. We're going to spike his food and we'll find out and then we can kill him. Da 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 da. But no, it's just, he just regular human food he can't digest.
Yep. On my second watch, I understood two things better. The first thing I understood is that this picks up literally immediately after the first movie.
Okay.
I thought that they had been like, you know, off fighting the war for a year, right? No, they like just met and he just turned into whatever creature he is. And then she also says, he's like, I'm hungry. And she's like, here's some blood. And he's like, nope, not for me. And she's like, well, try eating human food. You're going to die.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm not one for, I'm not really drawn towards like the werewolf story to begin with. I'm not against it, but it's just not my favorite.
Way less cool than vampires.
Creature. Yeah, exactly. But I'm always disappointed in the, I don't know what my North Star is for cinematic werewolves, but I'm always disappointed in the creatures that come up. And I think I might be just looking more for like the thriller werewolf, like Michael Jackson's werewolf or something. Maybe that's I find acceptable as a werewolf, but
similarly, mine's an American Werewolf in London.
That's what I was basic, about to say.
Which is basically the same. The same
thing. Yeah. John Landis responsible for both.
Right.
So, yeah.
There is a whole lot of who's this guy again throughout the film, though. That, like, we talked about the shifting main villain who usually is a vampire with the chicken skewers that Robin mentioned, but he looks like a gargoyle, but sometimes is just a douche. And it took me like till the douche's 8 appearance to go, oh, that's the bad guy.
It took me till just now, till you explained it, that that was the same guy. But, okay. I just thought he was always the little chicken guy.
The movie makes it worse by what the hell is the like
coronavirus?
Coronavirus? Corvinus, Maxwell, Malcolm. I don't know who. There's an old guy who is somehow.
Sir Derek Jacobi, one of the greatest actors who's ever lived.
It is the progenitor of both the vampires and the werewolves.
Correct.
He's still alive 1,000 years later for unaddressed reasons.
A magic bloodline. And it's the same bloodline that Squinty is in, which is why Squinty was able to become a hybrid.
Okay, right. So. Is a werewolf vampire.
In the first movie, he gets bitten by a werewolf, and then Kate Beckinsale bites him to save his life.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he's a werewolf vampire with the bloodline of the special humans, which is why he's the most powerful and can rip off the original werewolf's head at the end.
Correct. Which actually is, I've got it. You know what? I'm adding 5 points to my score just for that moment.
Well, that combined with kicking the original vampire into the helicopter blades, like,
this
ended strong.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
Derek Jacobi, coronavirus. Like, here are the 3 acts of this movie. Act 1, we don't know who the fuck that guy is. Act 2, they tell us who that guy is. Act 3, they admit that that guy wasn't that guy. It's actually coronavirus. Like, simplify. Get this on a line. Lynn. But then again, what do I know? They made 5 movies. They all made money. So who the hell knows?
Right.
Because there are people out there that just die hard high.
Are there?
I tried to Google. You know, I did a lot of Googling while watching this movie. I Googled Underworld fans.
Do they exist? Because I didn't get that far.
They exist, but mostly like on Reddit is what I could tell. And then there was also like some other weird websites that it was taking me to. So, I mean, I don't know. It's there's somebody out there likes these damn things. Yeah, there's a whole Twitter account called Underworld Fans.
Like, there are people who care about this mythology.
Yes, and there's a whole bunch of 20 weird facts about the Underworld franchise. There's also a Facebook page about this. So, yeah, there's people out there that this is their jam.
Good for them, I guess.
Sure, we all need something.
Yeah.
I guess this is a subset of humanity. I think if you were more of an action movie fan than a horror movie fan, but into supernaturally things... this might be your jam. Like, all the people who follow Supernatural and Once Upon a Time and even True Blood and all of the, like, mythology-heavy supernatural dramas, if those people also happen to love action movies, this is definitely for them. So, okay, sure.
I should be in that Venn diagram.
Yeah, like, I agree.
I feel like I'm there. Like, I would be... the prime target there, but for whatever reason, it just does not stick with me. And I was never interested in seeing these movies. And I don't know if it's because of the actors that are in it. Why? I don't know. I don't know what it is about it specifically that I just didn't care about. I guess the story and also just, I guess the actors are very uninteresting to me that were in the second one.
They really are, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I was trying to also like figure out, is there a movie that I really enjoyed Kate Beckinsale in? Serendipity was the closest thing I could come up with John Cusack.
Yeah, I didn't even like Serendipity. But that is the most she's ever seemed like a fully animated human.
Right. Right.
I mean, this is, she's one of those people that I'm like, I know who you are, but I don't have any reason to know who you are. Like now, because of this podcast episode.
Right.
Like, until we started recording, I probably thought this series was with Mila Jovovich, but that's Resident Evil.
Same, exactly. And Ultraviolet.
Ultraviolet.
Finding a Kate Beckinsale movie I liked, and...
There are a lot of, like, English literature type films. I feel like she...
She's like, in Much Ado About Nothing, right? Isn't she hero in that?
Yes. She was in Aviator, and that was good.
Oh, you know what she's in that's actually really great is Laurel Canyon. If you haven't seen Laurel Canyon...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's done way more than I would...
Yeah.
Done enough as to where I should know more about her. She's just kind of forgetful, maybe that's it? Because she's not...
Yeah.
She's not a bad actor. It's just people confuse her with Jennifer Connelly and Mila Jovovich.
The Last Days of Disco, also good, but I doubt it holds up.
Right.
Do we know how many consonants you're supposed to skip in Mila Jovovich?
No idea.
Because it could be Mia Jovovich, for all we know.
I know.
I think it is Jovovich. I think the first J isn't pronounced, but I truthfully don't know.
But it's definitely En Vogue. We've learned that.
Yeah, that is for sure. That I can absolutely tell you for certainty.
We can't get out of here without discussing the color blue. which I no longer believe is the warmest color. The day before I watched this, I watched Friday the 13th in 3D, which is the only time in my life I have watched an entire movie through those glasses where one eye is red and one eye is blue.
Okay.
Which it really gives you a headache.
Yeah.
And on the glasses I had, the red one was kind of only halfway working. So I watched basically an entire movie through a literal blue filter.
Okay.
The result was less blue than the movie Underworld Evolution. Why does this guy think, like, putting... you know, a substandard the Instagram Matrix filter over his entire film is a thing. Like, what could this even, what could the idea have possibly been? Their skin is blue.
The answer is still the Matrix.
Also, I think there's some sort of correlation with, and I feel like any film that I've ever seen that is that blue always has, like, the main character is talking like this and very subtle, very, very low. Very
also
deep.
The Matrix.
Everything is extremely important. I'm serious.
And there's kind of constantly dripping water in the background for some reason.
Still the Matrix.
So basically, what if the Matrix had vampires and werewolves and that is what Underworld is?
Yeah.
There's your 60-second recap.
Yeah. That's how we could have gotten it done.
Why did I waste my time?
let's rate the movie. Camila.
38.
At some point we're going to have to explore the like try to interpret how to predict what Camila is going to give a movie. Because it's always significantly lower or significantly higher than I thought it was going to be based on everything that Camila has said. But that's great. That's how we come to a consensus. Robin, who I think is trying to turn herself blue via Skype filters as we talk.
I just don't have all my lights on. 35, which I think is what I gave Twilight. This is the same. To me, this is the same level of bad as Twilight. It's a different kind of bad.
I'm more than doubling my Twilight score. I'm giving it a 54, which is exactly 1 point higher than War for the Planet of the Apes, because I went, I know that the Apes was a better movie, but this didn't make me as angry, and angry in different ways. I would sooner watch another Underworld movie than I would get really pumped about more apes. So a 54. If you're coming back in, the final score was 42 and a third. But more importantly, as I was calculating it, Camila produced our Tony Goldwyn standee and has taped a comically oversized party hat to his tiny, tiny head in observance of Tony Goldwyn's birthday. Happy birthday.
Hey, happy birthday, Tony. There will be a photo of said cutout on the Twitter account.
Thank you for bringing that into my life. That was so beautiful.
Well,
to peel back the curtain, as we so often like to do, we talked about having a Tony Goldwyn special episode, and it just wasn't thrilling enough of a random draw. We came up with the three movies, the three Tony Goldwyn joints we have not yet explored on the show one way or the other, were Ghost, Pelican Brief, and Tarzan, and drawing between the three of them just felt somewhat anticlimactic.
Absolutely.
But we still love you, Tony. Stop insulting him right before we draw a movie!
I know. Tony, listen, we're big fans, you know, of your whole thing, of your whole persona in the world. Robin started watching Scandal. What more do you want?
I finished watching Scandal.
Yay! I'm a big fan of Tony Goldwyn's walk.
Yeah.
Anyway, 42 and a third for Underworld Evolution. We have been hanging out in that general score area recently. It is a little bit higher than Michael. We like this movie a little bit more than Michael is the overall consensus.
We've got to do a good, like a really good movie soon here, like next week.
Yeah. Please.
Tony, we gave you a hat.
Tony. Tony. Buddy.
Let's go to the bingo card. We are in search of our second bingo. If you've been playing along at home, Robin scored the first one a good 8 or 10 episodes ago. We've been locked for a while on this run of episodes, and I don't know if we're adding anything again.
Which sucks.
Is there an argument to hackers?
What's his butt guy?
Because of his, he does the computering stuff that he only knows how to do because of illicitly gained blood knowledge.
Well, I mean, I think that might work.
It's a little bit of a stretch.
He literally hacked the blood. What more do you want?
I think it works. I think
he hacked the blood to hack the computer.
I don't win a bingo if that works. I just want to get this moving.
All right,
we'll take it.
Now watch, the next film is going to be Hackers.
That would be a gift.
Hackers is added to the bingo card. I now have two ways to win next week. If we land on something I own the DVD of, or our ratings are more than 30 apart.
Would Michael be a fish out of water?
I think in the first one, yes, but this one less so.
Gotcha.
That's the conversation we have every week. Is this fish out of its water? And I thought, you said, is Michael a fish out of water? And I'm like, the angel? Yes, he was. That was the previous bingo card. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth, starting, as we've been teased, with Robin's journey through the Shonda land. Tell us about finishing Scandal.
So Scandal left Netflix today as we record, and so I found out May 1st that it was leaving, and I had to watch 3 seasons in 2 weeks. That show is a lot. And also, because I had to watch so much in so little time, I was putting it on the background while working, and I'm not really a watch TV while working person. Mm-hmm. Not very good at that. And so I would like suddenly start paying attention again, and things would be completely off the rails. People who I thought were dead were alive again. But I have to say, ultimately, like, I think that show has a very, like, special place in pop culture. And everything that Shonda Rhimes does is just, like, it's so different than what you see. It's just not about white men in the way that everything else is, in a way that's, like, really satisfying. But I really have to say that Tony Goldwyn, like, is really good on that show.
Yeah.
Like, he brings it. And he could have totally slummed it and just been like, hello, I'm presidential and also I fuck. I am not just blowing smoke up his ass so that we'll get a good movie. But there's one episode in the last season that's like, what has Fitz been up to while all of this nonsense is going on? That I think was my favorite episode of the whole show, which is very funny considering I just was like, you know what's great about Scandal is that it's not about white men. You know who's the best person? The white man. That being said, anyway, Tony, thank you. And more importantly, Shonda, thank you.
Yes, for sure. It's such a fun ride. Like, a lot of it's, there's a lot of times you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, really? But for the most part, it's a good time.
It was also really fun summarizing what was going on to Colin every time he would wander in.
Well, personally, I haven't watched anything really new. Like, I watched two documentaries on Netflix. I watched the Michelle Obama Becoming one, and which was good. I mean, I feel bad, like, just being like, it was fine, because I felt the same way about her book as well.
Consensus, though. That's what right. seems like. Everybody's like, this is, yep.
Yeah. Right. Like, I don't think that. Like maybe if I read the book instead of listening to Michelle narrate it, like read it on Audible, I probably would feel a little bit differently, because she's not a good storyteller. She's I had a problem with the way she was telling her own story, and it's like, this isn't. but yeah. And then I also watched the Murder to Mercy, the Cyntoia Brown story.
I didn't know that came out. Oh gosh, is it good?
Yeah, it is good, and not as depressing as you might feel like it could be.
That is my concern. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, I did not walk away. I walked away like with some tears of joy. Okay, so it wasn't.
I mean, I guess it has a happy ending.
Right. Yeah, we all know that, but it's also like they didn't bog you down on a lot of the grim details. You know, like a lot of times it sensationalize. A lot of the documentaries just like want to give you like, oh, and this was this rape and murder and blah da da. So. It wasn't a lot of that. We get the facts and you get them told to you in a proper way. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I'm on in my alphabetical order Blu-ray quest. I'm on The Collector.
What is that?
It is an extremely terrifying, like very tense horror movie about this man who, and it's going to be a trilogy right now. It's two. There's The Collector and The Collection is the next one. And my friend Josh is in it. And this is why I've even stumbled upon them. And yeah, like this guy goes to burglarize this family. And then he stumbles upon this like house of fucking horrors, basically.
Oh, so that's so
it's extremely tense. The entire movie is just like, you're just like, oh my God. Like it's very, it was hard. It took me some days to like rev up to watch it. I'm like, I can't do this right now. I know what's coming and I just can't do it right now.
Yeah. That definitely sounds like a movie I'm excited to read the Wikipedia summary of.
If you're on Twitter, that's a certain kind of movie is Robin Hitchcock Wikipedia entry, like Midsommar. Midsommar is a prototypical
basically example. Any horror movie. I want to read about it and not have to watch it.
Too briefly, and then my big report for the week. In brief, though, The Lovebirds with Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae.
Oh, yeah.
This was the biggest one that was about to come out in normal theaters and instead is on Netflix. That Netflix specifically bought, and it will be just out as we are releasing this episode. It is good because I love watching both of them, and it's enjoyable to watch both of them, and they are funny when acting normally. Going to Netflix did it a favor. Like it's funny, and I recommend it, and I would watch it. If you bought a ticket and made a trip out of your house to watch that movie, you would go, I don't know, I didn't laugh that much. But putting it on Netflix, great.
Cool.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, that's what I expect. I just, for some reason, I thought that it was already a Netflix movie. I didn't think it was supposed to be in the theaters.
And it was a Netflix movie that they were going to release in theaters.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
It's my understanding of the situation.
This micro-budget sci-fi movie that everyone is buzzing about, The Vast of Night. That's good. That's like a slow burn Twilight Zone, trying to be Spielberg a little bit. Two kids are in a small town in Arizona in the 50s, and there might be UFOs, and it's very, very slow and, you know, cautious and lots of long shots. So that's not going to be for everybody. If you're into that, you'll probably love it. The big news is I went to the drive-in.
Yay!
And I'm so happy.
You didn't even care what they were showing.
No, I didn't. It's because I saw Trolls World Tour and genuinely loved it because it was at. I mean,
Sean, can you spoil Trolls World Tour for me and for our listeners?
Yes,
pause. You pause or mute if you don't want to find out, listeners. Does rock and roll get redeemed by the end? Rock and roll is not just the bad guy, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it sets it up more that pop was the bad guy. because of cultural appropriation.
Right.
And Rock being the conqueror was kind of just this one queen had a bug up her ass. But by the end, everyone decides to make music together because it's a children's movie. But like in the text of the thing, pop is the villain more than rock and roll is.
That's all I needed to hear. Thank you.
In any case, maybe it's because I had not gone to the movies in 62 days. I didn't like the first Trolls. I liked this one. It was funny. It was cute. I laughed at the parade of, oh, that's who that voice is. The best way to do Trolls is to have Wikipedia up and lean to the person sitting next to you. That's George Clinton. That's Anderson Paak. That's Jamie Dornan playing smooth jazz troll in the only good cast of Jamie Dornan ever.
Pandemic and drive-through aside, your reaction is how I reacted to the first Trolls, which I watched for the Oscars Death Race, and which Sean was like, I'm so sorry that you have to experience this. But I was like, it's funny and cute, and I understand why children would like it.
It was fun.
This is adding steam to a theory that's probably irrelevant in the post-pandemic world. For years, a lot of children's movies getting sneak previews happen at 10 a.m. on a Saturday. One of the only times during the week I don't want to be at a movie, and especially not at a movie full of children that I didn't choose. And so there's a lot of things, like Abominable last year was another one of them, where like I go to see one of these and I'm like, that was terrible. And then the reviews are like, fine. And mm-hmm. and it's probably because I didn't want to be there. That probably the Boss Baby. Well, maybe that was just bad.
No, the Boss Baby's legit good. Like Trolls, really? I was like, I don't hate this. But yeah. The Boss Baby is an actually good movie. I know that sounds.
I genuinely liked Trolls World Tour. If somehow you have a child and we were on a Zoom with my cousin who has like a 3-year-old and he's like, we've spent $180 on Trolls World Tour because she keeps demanding to see it. Oh, and you can only rent it and not buy it.
Jesus. But, see, this is
that's where I think piracy becomes okay.
Right. Exactly. I am waiting for as long as possible before, you know, until Kajia can actually like ask me to watch movies. So I'm trying to limit the bullshit that I subject myself to. It's like Sesame Street for 2 hours a day is more than enough. But yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
But shout out to if you're listening to us in Pittsburgh, I highly recommend Dependable Drive-In. I know there's a lot of drive-ins open right now because it's the only possibility. And I know that there are a lot of variations in which ones are actually doing anything about COVID and which ones are not. Dependable was great. They had staff going around making sure people were parked far enough apart. If you had like chairs lined up in between cars, they were like, no, move that in front of your car so you're not near people getting out of their car. They had an app to order food, and when you walk to the snack bar, no one could go inside, and there was plexiglass. Everyone working was wearing masks and gloves. I walked into it terrified because it was the first time I had gone to a place to do a thing in 2 months, and you know, after an hour, I felt totally fine. So I really recommend the drive-in all the time. This has kind of reactivated my love of it. But if you have a drive-in near you, go to the drive-in every week until the world comes back. It was great. That's it. That's my thing. Trolls? Sure. Shall we drop? Wouldn't it be great if it were Trolls?
Not really.
No, the answer is still no. But
yeah, I'll defend Trolls, but I don't really want to watch it a second time.
I'm like, maybe I was wrong the first time. Let's draw a movie. The number is 1153. This continues our why is it late in the list, but whatever, fine. We're only missing another Underworld by about 20 spots. Okay. 1153 is Toy Story 4, recent Toy Story from last year. We've probably discussed it on the show because it was last summer. I'm sure that one of us saw it.
I have not seen it yet. So, I mean, it's fine.
It's on Disney Plus, right?
It is on Disney Plus.
Okay, yeah. Fine. Cool. We're going to talk about Toy Story 4. We're going to talk about Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah. Keanu Reeves is really good in this. I might use this as I did with Unbreakable. I might apply the Unbreakable standard here and go back 2 movies because somehow I've never seen Toy Story 2.
I'm feeling a marathon coming on.
Let's not go nuts. Like,
they're all like 90 minutes.
I know, but I don't need the like, oh, these graphics actually are terrible of watching Toy Story again. Nor the emotional breakdown of watching Toy Story 3 again.
Oh, like, I've only watched it the one time. I'm going to watch all four. I have rewatched Toy Story fairly recently, and while the graphics look old, the movie is so good, you don't care.
I believe you. I just any marathon would involve, like...
that moment.
Toy Story 3 is so acutely for people of about our age, about, like, your childhood is dead, and that's okay, but it's dead. And
like,
it's
dead.
And you will be too eventually, and you should probably accept that before you get sucked into this fire. Like, it's... whew. But Toy Story 4 is just another movie with Keanu Reeves and a surprising amount of Shining references. We'll talk about it next week. That's the real problem with the Underworld franchise. My brain went, what movie are we talking about on this episode? And it went, fuck, I don't know. And it's a tough one on the number one song in America. Underworld was number one January 20th of 2006. What was the number one song in America?
Sexy Back.
No, you're in, I think, the right year.
This is my pop culture dark year. I don't know shit about 2006.
Yeah, I'll have to walk you through it because it's by a recognizable artist, but it is not a recognizable song. This Southern hip hop star.
Lil Wayne. No. Lil Jon.
No.
Nelly.
Correct.
St. Louis is not really the South.
I know, but like, listen to Nelly. I'm like, yeah, this is Southern. Like, for all that we made a big deal over Old Town Road, like, yeah, but I remember Country Grammar. Like, this is not an entirely new idea. Anyway, I don't think it's possible to get this because I had never heard of it before. If you can name, if you know like 10 Nelly singles, there's a chance this is one of them.
I think I know like two. And is he with somebody? Is just him by himself?
It's with people, but I don't know who they are either. The song is called Grills with a Z.
Nope. Have no idea.
I got nothing. Yeah.
By Nelly featuring Paul Wall, Ali, and Gip.
Jesus.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've embarrassed my St. Louis in-laws, but I have no idea what that is.
The world improved later that year because, like, most of the first half of these are songs I've never heard of before. And by summer, we get to, like, Rihanna's SOS and Hips Don't Lie and Promiscuous and Sexy Back and but these are the only songs I remember from clubbing. Have I said this on the podcast before?
This was when you were in Ireland?
Yes. Because in Ireland I don't look abnormally white. I look expectedly white.
Number one movie in America.